to order. Then clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, Excused, Berger, Boquist, Crummel, Excuse for Business, Buckley, Hunt, Nolan, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Thatcher.
Flag salute will be led by Representative Ron Maurer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony this morning will be presented by Gordon Bettles. He is a member of the Klamath Tribe and he is steward of the Many Nations Longhouse in Eugene, sponsored by Representative Nancy Nathanson.
We need this box for a short people to stand on. I was just telling Nancy that I'm also on the board of the Pearl Buck Center and am helping them with their capital campaign to move into a larger, more appropriate facility. It is a tribal value to never move beyond the means of the slowest and the weakest among you. In this manner, we take care of our children and those mentally challenged and those with other afflictions. So the tribe always moves only as fast as its slowest can move. In that manner, that's why I'm helping Pearl Buck Center. I would encourage the House to take that approach as you do your daily business. It's a tribal value, and I say it's a human value. So always consider those who are the slowest and weakest among you. Never move too fast and leave them behind. Thank you. Let us pray. Atlan blaid ochni mo sepkecha dichken waitis doi so des. Doi so dewap mo sepkecha. No sepnalani so dewap koskanga dua isetna. Dua hoot lakiak setwai. Setwai. Dich huskanga, dich so dewak, drahut tataxini, me tataxini sent nalani. Moisep catcher, dich kinwaitis, atanat sodeas, sodeas at Moisep catcher. Chetsmut. Our Father on high, we thank you for this day. We thank you for good thoughts, for good hard work. We thank you for giving us the opportunity to be here. Father on high, we also ask you to help us as we think good thoughts and work hard to remember what you have taught us, that we are together, that we will always take care of each other. Thank you. It's all been said.
Courtesies. Representative Dallum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. On the side aisle is Ben Garrett. I'd like to have Ben come to the bar. Ben is 21. He's a student at Columbia Gorge Community College. He plans to transfer to Eastern Oregon this fall. He's president of the Wasco County Young Republicans. He's on the Oregon Federation of College Republicans. He plans to become a teacher. He loves working with kids. Obviously, he likes politics. He plans one day to run for public office. Maybe he'll sit in this chair. Ben has also been most helpful to me. I also have two pages that I would like to stand up. David Stiles. And David is an outstanding, and Mr. Kennedy, would you please stand too? Both of these young men I know personally. Both are in Boy Scouts. Both have paper routes. They helped decorate at our house for Christmas. They put their services up in an auction, and we bought their services. They're not only hard workers, good Boy Scouts, but they're good Christmas decorators. I'd like you to extend to them the courtesies of the House. Thank you very much.
For the courtesies, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce Paige this morning. Brandon Michaels, he's from Portland, and he's the son of Jim and Deborah Michaels. He's 13, and he's in eighth grade at Centennial Middle School. And Brandon likes football, wrestling, BMX riding, and the Boy Scouts. So welcome, Brandon. Enjoy your day in the Capitol.
Representative Sarah Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope you will join me in welcoming Paige today. Honorary Paige, please stand up, Terry. Terry Bartlow is from Philomath. She is the daughter of John and Shelley Bartlow. She's 16 years old and a sophomore at Philomath High School. Terry plays basketball and volleyball. She is involved in student government. She is a Philomath Celebration participant. She volunteers for that, and she leads her school Bible study program. Terry is also a member of the National Honor Society. Her career goals include pursuing a career in law and politics. She has a deep passion for both of those. She wants to take Spanish classes and become bilingual, and after this, she would like the opportunity to be a page at the congressional level. So, Terry, thank you for coming today, and I hope you'll all join me in welcoming her to the Capitol.
Are there further courtesies? I have the privilege to introduce three pages from my district. If they could stand, Samantha Osborne, Rebecca Osborne, and Perry Anderson. They are all from Park Rose High School. Samantha is age 16, and her interests include working on the yearbook and working to end the genocide in Darfur. Rebecca, her sister, is 17 and graduating. She is very interested in graphic design and web design and belongs to the Key Club. And Perry is on the school newspaper, interested in politics and considering the possibility of going to college to study journalism. So it's a delight to have them here today. Thank you. Further courtesies, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to say that Becky and Sammy Osborne are the daughter of that handsome, hard-working intern of mine, Skip Osborne, the best-dressed man in the Capitol. Thank you very much for welcoming them to the Capitol.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This morning I have the privilege of introducing a couple of honorary pages on behalf of Representative Crummell, who is not here today. First, there is Nicholas Ivins. There he is. He's from Sherwood, and he is a sixth grader at Veritas School in Newburgh. Nicholas is interested in politics, electronics, and architecture. He participates in wrestling, speech, and choir. And he is the class accountant. He wants to be an Olympic wrestler. Nicholas, you want to be a wrestler? Is that true? Wow. A dentist or a lawyer. So welcome, Nicholas. And then we have Rebecca Ivins, also from Sherwood. She is an eighth grader at Veritas School. Rebecca is part of junior high choir, is in school plays, speech meet, and class secretary. She's interested in politics, dance, science, piano, and she wants to attend a university. Well, we wish you well in that endeavor, and welcome.
Are there any further courtesies? Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the printing form. The Senate has passed House Bills 2729, 2773, 3290. Senate Bills 508, 725. House Bills 2362, 2668, 2669, 2782, 2869, 2068, 2069, 2218, 2219, 2221, 2250, 2287, 2289, 2379, 2490, 2756, 29, 70, 30, 68, 2244, 3068, 3354, 3360. Adopted H.R. 51. Passed the following House Bills as amended by the Senate. House Bill 3414 and 2147. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the printing form that he assigned Senate Bills 70, 72, 166, 168, 190, 260, 310, 311, 408, 409, 410, 412, SGR 26. House Bills 2372, 2702, 2992, Senate Bills 66, 171, 236, 380, 417, 559, SGR 16, 15, 12, 11, 9, SGR 21.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2677 relating to wine self-distribution permits. House Bill 3543 relating to climate change and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3556 relating to food safety and declaring an emergency.
Bills read a second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that bills remaining on today's consent calendar be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, March 17, 2007 calendar. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Did I say March? That would be May. Third reading of House bills. Clerk, read the first bill.
House Bill 3241 relating to actions involving improvements to real property.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3241. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moved real quick this morning. Colleagues, I bring to you House Bill 3241, which shortens the statute of repose for construction defects in large commercial projects. Colleagues, these projects are ones in which large construction companies and large developers have many attorneys involved and iron out detailed contracts that protect each other. This bill was brought forward by the Oregon General Associated of General Contractors. It's a good bill to help construction companies and to help development in the state of Oregon. I'll urge your eye support today.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cameron. Did I hear a call? Barnhart requests a call of the House. He is joined by Representative Edwards, Representative Holvey, Representative, let me get some hands in the air here, Representative Riley, Representative Shields, and Representative Cannon. The doorkeeper will draw the doors, Sergeant Arms at 10, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Berger Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist. Boquist Bruin, Buckley, Buckley Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Hunt Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Nolan Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Roblin Rosenbaum, Rosenbaum Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Thatcher Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker. Not answering. Berger. Burley. Hunt, Nolan, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Thatcher, excuse, not subject to the call. Three, Boquist, Butler, Crummel. Also excused, Berger.
All members are present. Representative Bruin, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to announce a potential conflict.
Colleagues, can we have it quiet for a moment? Please go ahead and state your potential conflict for the record.
Thank you. I work for a general contractor that does large commercial projects.
It is duly noted. Representative Shuffler.
Declare a conflict, Mr. Speaker.
Please go ahead and do so.
I'm a licensed general contractor in the state of Oregon.
It is duly noted. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please go ahead.
Licensed contractor.
It is noted. Representative Thatcher.
I state a potential conflict.
Please go ahead and state your conflict for the record.
Licensed contractor.
It is noted. Any other conflicts? Representative Cameron, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion that House Bill 3241 should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Barnhart? Votes aye. Representative Holvey? Votes aye. House Bill 3241, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3077, relating to insurance.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3077A. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. I rise today to bring House Bill 3077A to the floor from the House Consumer Protection Committee, where it received a due pass recommendation. Under current law, the insurance division may only determine that a rate is excessive in the property and casualty insurance market if the market is non-competitive. The insurance division cannot review and determine rates excessive in a competitive market. Information provided to the committee by the insurance division has shown that loss ratios have declined with these insurance products while rates have not. Under this bill, the insurance division could ask the carriers for information to explain why this is the case and rules rates excessive if warranted. Under current law, their ability to make those determinations is limited. House Bill 3077A changes this by giving the Department of Consumer and Business Services the authority to review and determine if property and casualty rates are excessive in a competitive market. The insurance division can determine health insurance rates as excessive in a competitive market. This bill would simply conform property and casualty lines with the insurance lines and give Department of Consumer and Business Services, the insurance division, the ability to make sure consumers in property and casualty lines are being protected from excessive rates. Colleagues, this is a good bill that protects the interest of insurance consumers. Please join me in voting aye on this important bill.
Further discussion, Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
As always, I will be as brief as possible. Thank you. Thank you for making that statement for me. This bill is really a lousy bill because right now there is no problem in casualty and property insurance. We rated as in the bottom 10 statewide for both of these insurances. So why are we going into further regulate? That was the question before the committee, and it split 4-3 on the committee. This area of insurance is not having any problems. Let's not further regulate it. Let's not add costs to the government. We don't need to be here.
Seeing no one else in the queue for discussion, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, I do. Colleagues, we did have information presented to us. For example, the top 10 auto insurance insurers who compromise about 60% of the market have been holding their rates flat for the last 3 years after a couple of years of high single-digit rate increases. The auto insurance loss ratios have also decreased over the past 3 years. So when we're seeing these kinds of loss ratios that are falling and the rates aren't following along with that, it begs the question of what is driving these rates higher. This just gives the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the insurance division, the ability to ask the insurers for data to confirm what are driving those rates in these markets. This is a real simple bill. The DCBS Insurance Division already has this ability in the health insurance lines. This is a good consumer bill. I urge your aye vote.
Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Hunt votes aye. Representative Richardson votes aye. Is that everyone? Representative Holvey, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to change my vote from aye to nay and serve notice of possible reconsideration.
Representative Holvey changes his vote from aye to nay and serves notice of possible reconsideration. Representative Richardson.
I change my vote from aye to no.
Representative Richardson changes his vote from aye to nay. House Bill 3077A, having failed to receive a constitutional majority, is declared failed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3252, relating to reports published by Department of Human Services.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3252A. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today to urge your support of House Bill 3252A, the Responsible Employer Act. This bill may have come from the Committee on Workforce and Economic Development, but in reality, it's a bill about government accountability. It should have come from the Government Accountability Committee. This bill allows the legislature to respond to citizens who want to know where and how their tax money is being spent. You can't save money until you know how you're spending it. And this bill will help us better identify where the money is going so we can do something about it. This bill requires the Department of Human Services, DHS, to annually collect employment data and prepare a report listing the 40 employers doing business in the state with the greatest number of employees who receive medical assistance and food stamp benefits. That information will then be reported to the Legislative Assembly by March 1st of each year and made available by the DHS online website. Oregon won't be the first state to enact such a system. Similar reporting systems already exist in states across the nation, from Hawaii to Maine.
Colleagues, the conversations are arising. Can we please take them outside into the lobby and give Representative Riley our attention?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I say, this legislation already exists in systems from Hawaii to Maine, all the way across the country. In addition, the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Department of Human Services have determined that the bill will not have a fiscal impact and the DHS will be able to absorb the minimal costs associated with it. Colleagues, this is a good bill and brings more accountability to our government, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? See none. Representative, do you wish to close? He does not.
No.
Representative, there is further discussion. Representative Lim.
And would Carrier yield questions?
Question of the Carrier, does Carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you very much for yielding my questions. I have information from the Oregon Employment Department, and if I may read, Employment Department has serious concerns regarding House Bill 3252. The bill would place the Employment Department out of conformity with federal unemployment insurance law. Additionally, this bill could result in the violation of the Federal Privacy Act. Could you explain in regards to this House bill of this federal law?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. Actually, the department has no further concerns because they've been eliminated from this bill.
All right. And additional questions?
Additional questions. Carrier yield?
Yes.
Carrier yields.
And the House bill, the line 11, the list of 40 employers doing business in the state. How do we pick the 40 employers?
Those will be the 40 employers who, by number, not by percentage, but by number, have the highest number of employees who receive medical assistance or food stamps.
Clarification?
Clarification is carry yield.
Sure.
Carry yields.
So how do you know a company that they have a lot of employees receiving food stamps and public assistance? How do we know that?
Well, we'll know that because the DHS, the Department of Human Services, already has that information. That's one of the questions they ask anyone who receives these benefits, because they need to investigate to see if they qualify.
All right. Additional questions?
Additional question is Carrie Yeal.
Yes.
He does.
In the line 17, whether each employer listed on the paragraph A of this section is unionized or non-unionized. Why the government intrusive try to find out to the employer whether the company has been unionized or non-unionized? What government has a business with them?
Well, that's a good question, and I had that same question, but it turns out that was requested by one of the largest employers who actually think that they're going to be on this list. So that's where that came from.
All right. Thank you very much for the questions to the bill.
To the bill.
The members and friends, I don't think we need this bill, and it is very intrusive. I don't think this will create unfriendly atmosphere to the companies coming to our state, that the government is going to check upon them how many people employed in their company are receiving public assistance, medical assistance, food stamp, whatever. This is very intrusive from the government to the private business. And this is not the business of the government whether the company is unionized or not of the employees. I believe this is too intrusive. This will create unfriendly atmosphere to the companies. And then it is very discriminatory, just picking up arbitrarily 40 companies out of thousands of companies in the state. So this is very discriminatory. Out of that concern, I'm going to vote no, and I also urge each member to vote no. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will be brief on this one as well. This is the I Hate Walmart bill. And colleagues, we had testimony that we're going to know who the top 10 are on this list without doing the list. And I don't understand why we want to spend money out of DHS for this information. What are we going to do with this information? We're going to do anything other than try to embarrass these companies that are on the list.
If we know them from other states, then I see no need for this. And I think if the money that's in DHS needs to go to those people that most need the money. We sure don't need it for political reasons, and that's what this is. I hate Walmart bill.
President Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question for the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Representative, just I'm looking at line B20 or on line 23. It says by March of each year, and I'm concerned the data that's going to be posted on March 1st of each year. What time period was that data collected?
During the previous calendar year.
Thank you. Follow-up, if I may.
Is that an additional question?
Yes.
Do you yield?
I do.
He does.
So there's two things we're looking at. That we're looking at food stamps and medical benefits. Mm-hmm. If a person had food stamps for a limited time during that period, but went off of those food stamps after gaining employment with one of these employers, would there be a way that that name would come off that list?
No. DHS says that they will just compile a list from the previous year, and that will be the, what the report's based on.
Thank you. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this list is going to be published on March 1st, and it'll be a list of people that from, I'm using my head here, 15 months earlier that were on some sort of assistance that possibly could have come off of that assistance because they got a raise, because they were promoted. And this is old data. This data is not going to mean anything by the time it's published. These numbers aren't going to be accurate. I have no idea why we're going to spend taxpayers' resources, additional taxpayers' resources, to collect data that's going to mean nothing by the time it's published. I urge your no vote. Thank you.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, and I will be brief as well. I want to encourage everyone to vote yes on this bill for two reasons. One, and with regard to the fiscal impact, this is data that the department already collects. And other states are doing this, and it's a good idea to get a sense of what is the intersection between employment and public assistance. I look at this as a good bill in terms of allowing people to know how their tax dollars are being spent, the connection with employment. I think some employers would want to know that the dollars that they're putting into public systems are helping their employees. I think this is a positive bill. I urge you to vote aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 3252A, and I think this, colleagues, this is a really good bill that is consistent with a lot of things that a lot of us talk about around here, and that is accountability and being good stewards of taxpayer dollars, and also having a level playing field for employers. We know already that we have a lot of people in this state who are working full-time and yet are either on the Oregon Health Plan or getting food stamps or other kinds of public assistance because their employers aren't providing benefits. Now, no one wants to go after hardworking small mom-and-pop businesses who simply can't afford to provide benefits, but the reality is that we have very large corporations like Walmart in this state who have a high percentage of their workforce consistently being subsidized by our taxpayers, whether for health care or other purposes. So all this bill calls for is to provide that information so that we as policymakers can take a look at how we're doing business in this state and make sure that if we are subsidizing employers that we are able to have a conversation about that. So I think it really is a bill that will level the playing field. We have other employers that are struggling just as hard as some of these corporations and providing health care, and they shouldn't be having to compete at taxpayers' expense with employers that are taking advantage of our hard-earned tax dollars. So I would urge your aye vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, House Bill 3252A will provide the taxpaying public with a list of employers whose compensation is sufficiently low that their employees top the list in terms of qualifying for such public assistance as food stamps and health care. Mr. Speaker and colleagues, the public has a right to know who it is that's responsible for taxing the taxpayers. Because of that, I urge your aye vote on House Bill 3252A. Thank you.
Representative Shuffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Yeah, you know, it's no secret that my philosophy here is to definitely help business do all we can to attract and retain business here in the state of Oregon, including a long list of things to help do that, tax breaks, tax incentives, land use exemptions, greater use of our natural resources here in the state of Oregon, all kinds of things I support to help business here in the state of Oregon. My wife has a business and full-time employees, of which she only has two. She does provide health care, too. She's also, through her taxes and her workers' taxes, subsidizing the health care of some fairly substantially large businesses here in the state of Oregon, and it's an unseen benefit and subsidy that we need to see. Because if you're a taxpayer, you're paying for that business's employees' health care. Health care is not a social issue here in America. Health care is a business issue. It needs to be put on the business agenda, and we have to know where our tax dollars are going and who's benefiting from it, and we need to help them that aren't helping us carry the load put their shoulder to the wheel and provide workers with health care here and their families health care here in the state of Oregon so that we can thrive right along with all the other industrialized nations that do provide health care to all their citizens. A good bill. I urge your vote.
See no further discussion. Representative Riley, do you wish to close?
Yes. Thank you. I want to address a few issues that have come up during the discussion. And one of the issues was companies coming into the state, and it was suggested that this will cause them to have pause. I think on the contrary, this will help us with recruiting businesses who actually like to do good business, take care of their employees, and are good citizens. The question came up about unionization. Why is that in here? And again, that was a question I had, and the answer is simply one of the very large companies that it thinks they're going to be at the top of this list has asked for that to be in this bill, and we saw no reason to keep them from having something in this bill. Discrimination. This is not a discriminatory bill. We're going to be looking at at all employers in the state and determining where they are in the role, and we'll only be reporting the top 40. What do we do with this information? Well, you know, I've been a data analyst pretty much my whole life, and what I've determined is that you can't really fix a problem until you know what the problem is, and you can't know what a problem is until you've got data to show you. And this will bring to light whether or not we have a problem, and if so, how big is it, and what do we do about it? I think this will be a good bill for analysis for further look. It was also said that this is the Walmart bill. Maybe. I don't know. Also talked about this is a bill that will show how people are doing it. This has nothing to do with showing anything about people. There will be no names. The smallest employers, where it would be easy to see who the employees are, won't even be on the list. And finally, issue about old data. It's really rare in any data reporting to have data this new. I think it's going to be incredibly important to look at this data. If you look at reports coming out of most agencies, you'll find they're still reporting on 2004, 2005 data. We're going to be much better than that with this bill. So with all those concerns, I just don't see any validity in that statement at all. So with that, colleagues, I urge your support of this bill. It's a good bill. Taxpayers deserve to know where their money is being spent, and we deserve to know what we can do to help. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Hunt, how do you vote? Hunt votes aye. All have voted. House Bill 3252A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3339, relating to unemployment insurance.
Representative Witt, for what purpose do you rise? Representative Witt, for what purpose do you rise? No. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3339, relating to unemployment insurance.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3339. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm bringing you another great bill. House Bill 3339 modifies the conditions under which employees can receive unemployment benefits when they become unemployed due to a multi-employer lockout resulting from a labor dispute. It does this by removing the additional qualifications that disqualify individuals from applying for unemployment insurance. Under this bill, individuals can apply for and receive unemployment benefits if the Employment Department Director has been shown that the individual is unemployed due to a lockout. Under current law, employees who are ready, willing, and able to work are unemployed involuntarily as a result of a lockout in a multi-employer dispute are ineligible for unemployment insurance. These employees do not have the choice of going to work or not, the way striking employees do. Neither can they receive unemployment insurance to offset their losses they incur by not being permitted to work. Denying them insurance is de facto government support of the employer's position in every case. What this measure does not do is change Oregon law that prohibits employees who choose to strike from receiving unemployment benefits. Colleagues, in 30 other states, non-striking workers who become unemployed due to a lockout are eligible for unemployment benefits. These workers are willing and able to do the work they were hired to do. But without even being involved in a labor dispute, these workers become the victims of employers who choose to use lockouts in a multi-employer unit as a collective bargaining tool. By locking out all employees, employers are able to begin negotiations with individual unions and apply pressure to others who to end the strike. Alarmingly, this lockout strategy is becoming more widely utilized by employers throughout the country. In California, non-striking workers at Albertsons were locked out of their jobs for more than 100 days. The result was that 21 unions became involved in retracted and expensive negotiations with the employer because their work was taken away even though they were not striking against their employer and were working under separate contracts than those that were striking. And it's important to note that these employees are working under separate contracts. These disruptions do not only affect unions, they can have a devastating impact on families, communities, and employers as well. It is true that these individuals can access strike funds established by union, but these only go so far to meet basic needs of a family. Without the added safety net that unemployment insurance provides, these workers are at risk of losing many of the things they have spent their whole life working for. Colleagues, this is a good common sense bill. Giving unemployment benefits to good, hardworking, non-striking individuals who are willing to work and able to work is only fair. I strongly urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, let's be clear. This is about a very small subset of contracts and strike situations, but I think it's important to get some things clearly in your mind about what is happening here. We are talking about multi-employer contracts. The unions have the option of multi-employer bargaining or not multi-employer bargaining. Nobody forces them into multi-employer bargaining. Then when they choose to have multi-employer bargaining, there may be multiple employers, but the contract wording is exactly the same. In my mind, it is the same contract. Okay, so when a strike is contemplated against one of these employers, all of the union members, whether they are in the striking employees, in the employers that's being struck against employ, or any involved in this multi-employer contract bargaining, they all have a strike vote. So it isn't just one part that's voting to strike. They are all voting to strike. In response to that, the multi-employers do a lockdown, and then is when the problem starts. The strikers' workers know that they are not entitled to unemployment insurance if they are striking, and yet they are saying, but if the employers respond appropriately to these joint union contracts, we're going to lock them out. They have made a positive strike vote. They have been locked out, and then they want to turn around and have unemployment insurance. That is not right. It is not fair. People need to understand the responsibility they take when they make a positive strike vote. They have marked it. They have, as a union, collaborated on a strike. So they are all part of it in my mind. If they didn't want to do it this way, they needed to start from the beginning and not have a multi-employer, what I consider to be a single contract. It may be three separate pieces of paper, but the wording is the same in all cases. That's what multi-employer bargaining is. So then to turn around and make a positive strike vote and then say, oh, poor me, I didn't understand I was striking. I want to be able to positively say strike and then get unemployment insurance. I think this is patently unfair and very bad policy. I don't care what they do in other states. I would urge a no vote on this bill.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, what has just been said is absolutely 100% correct. This is about responsibility, accountability, and it's about we have agreed to something, but doggone it, we're going to vote for a strike. So-and-so, one-third of the organization went out on strike. The other two-thirds decide, well, we really didn't want to do this, so we should get unemployment. Again, accountability, responsibility. If you're going to participate, you participate, and you get down and you vote. If you vote for a strike and you end out on strike and you get out locked out, then you voted for that. You have voted to support that. So therefore, this bill is a bad bill, and I do hope we get a nay vote.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise today in support of this bill. This is very important for my district, House District 44, home of the Port of Portland. And you should have in your file a floor letter from the International Longshore and Warehouse Union. This issue is about fairness. In 2002, the Pacific Maritime Association, which is a multi-employer group representing approximately 70 different companies, locked out 25,000 working longshoremen in the states of California, Oregon, and Washington. Fortunately, the lockout was short-lived because the federal government intervened on this tactic. However, when the workers from California, Oregon, and Washington applied for unemployment benefits, the workers in Oregon could not get unemployment benefits, which had a detrimental effect on their families, working families, working folks who keep our economy going. This is an important bill. It's a matter of fairness. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
So you have business A, business B, and business C. There's one union represents all the workers under a collective bargaining agreement with all three of those businesses. The workers at business A aren't happy with their contract. They want to renegotiate it. It comes to a standstill. They want to go on strike. They go to their union and they say, we would like you all to authorize a strike. They all vote to authorize a strike. They go, A goes on strike. The workers over at B and C show up to work, ready, willing, and able to work. They did not vote for A to go on strike. They voted to support their union brothers and sisters at business A. They're locked out through no fault of their own, even though they're there present, ready, and able to work. This is a good bill. I strongly urge your aye vote.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, House Bill 3339 provides unemployment insurance benefits for workers who are ready, willing, and able to go to work, but whose employer has locked them out of their jobs. This is an offensive weapon. The employees never asked to be thrown out of their jobs. They never voted on being asked to leave their employment. From the employee's vantage point, their plight is no different than if they were laid off, except for one key factor. They are ineligible for unemployment benefits after their employer has taken them off the job. This is a consummately fair bill. I urge your support and your aye vote for House Bill 3339. Thank you.
For the discussion, Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to speak from the different perspective.
To the bill.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker. Currently, we have approximately $1.9 billion in the unemployment insurance fund. And annually, we spend up to $1.2 billion annually for the unemployment insurance expenses. And then annual revenue of the unemployment insurance taxes is about $500 to $700 million. So we are talking about the solvency of this program. We are saving this money in case the economy go down, many people unemployed, then we need to have this money. This current biennium, we are looking at continually adding up little by little on the unemployment and the benefit, and then eventually we might be able to running out. This is a very important subject at this time, so we need to keep that in mind, that the slowly, usually big trees, we can cut it down by the small axis. This is one of the small axes. Continue chipping away just a little by little, asking and more, eventually we'll be in the situation we can afford. If you remember, 1980s, we had such one of the highest in the nation of the workers' compensation taxes in our state. Business couldn't afford at that time. We don't want to be there anymore. We need to keep it in a moderate. I strongly support the union and the workers, but with a fairness. I don't think this is a good bill. We need to just vote no. So send a strong message. Thank you very much.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
He does.
Thank you. I just need a little clarification. The good representative from Happy Valley talked about we've got a business A, business B, business C. They're all the same general types of businesses, all under one corporate management. Is that correct?
No. They may not be all in the same corporate management. They may be in the same industry, though.
Another question, Mr. Treat?
Additional question. Is carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
Carrier yields.
Okay. Are they all under the same union contract?
No. They each have separate contracts. They bargain them together in the industry oftentimes.
They bargain them together in the industry.
Clarification, does the carrier yield? Carrier
does
yield.
Yes, he does. So the clarification is that they don't necessarily bargain these contracts at the same time. They oftentimes, in a geographic area, will have much the same provisions in the contract to create some the same working conditions in the area. But these are separate contracts. It could be Fred Meyer and Albertsons, different corporations. They sign different contracts. These are different contracts.
Further question?
Further question. The carrier, does carrier yield?
Yes, he does.
Carrier yields.
Are they contracts essentially the same?
They're not necessarily universal, but oftentimes these contracts do have the same provisions in the contracts. But they are, again, separate contracts with different corporations.
The more we talk about this...
Additional question of the carrier?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
The more we talk about this, the more confused I think everyone is. I would tend to be very supportive of labor and their right to strike and protections of those rights. I understand why labor unions originated in this country, and I understand they've served a very important purpose in that. I also understand that as time has gone by, labor unions have become extremely large and powerful economic and social forces in our society, and by the same token, so have many companies that have become you know, huge, huge companies. But this is, colleagues, this, in spite of my support of union and union activity, generally, this too many unanswered questions, I think, that we don't seem to have quick, good answers to. And therefore, I would urge a no vote from the members of the chamber on this particular bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. I know this subject matter seems confusing, but the actual fact is that when employees are locked out in one of these multi-employer situations, you have the people that are actually have the labor dispute with the company that's involved in it, and that particular company locks their employees out, those employees can collect unemployment insurance currently. But it's the employees that are working for another company in this multi-employer bargaining unit that are not associated with, their employer is not involved in the labor dispute. It's those employees that cannot collect unemployment insurance. This is, you know, backwards. I mean, it's not fair. I mean, of all people, those people should be able to collect their unemployment benefits. And this bill is aimed at straightening that out. This is a fair bill for folks that get locked out, that are willing to go to work. They have no beef with their employer. This is a tool that's used that is simply unfair. I urge an aye vote of this, colleagues. And, Mr. Speaker, I respectfully ask for a call of the House.
Representative Holvey asks for a call of the House. He is joined by Representative Riley, Representative Buckley, Representative Reed, Representative Kotek, Representative Barnhart. Doorkeepers will bar the doors. Sergeant Arms will attend. And the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Fire. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excuse, not subject to the call, 3, Boquist, Butler, Crummel.
All members are present. Representative Richardson.
Speaker, I would request an oral roll call vote.
Representative Richardson requests an oral roll call vote. He is joined in that request by Representative Nelson, Representative Scott, Representative Hannah, Representative Thatcher, and Representative Flores. In reverse alphabetical order, those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye when your name is called. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Witt.
Aye.
Wisnet. Tomei, Thatcher, Patty Smith, Greg Smith, Shields, Scott, Schaffler, Rosenbaum, Roblin, Riley, Richardson, Reed, Olson, Nolan, Nelson. Nathanson. Morgan. Minnis. Maurer. McPherson. Lim. Crummell. Krieger. Kotek. Comp. Jensen. Hunt. Holvey. Hannah. Greenlick. Gerard. Gilman. Gilliam. Gelzer. Gerard. Galizio. Flores. Esquivel. David Edwards. Chris Edwards. Dingfelder. Dallum. Cowan. Clem. Cannon. Cameron. Butler. Burley. Buckley. Bruin. Boquist. Boone. Bonamici. Byer. Byer. Berger. Barnhart. Barker. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Voting no. Berger. Bruin. Burley. Cameron. Dallum. Esquivel. Flores. Gerard. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Hannah. Jensen. Krieger. Lim. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nelson. Olson. Richardson. Scott. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Wisnett. Excused. Three. Boquist. Butler. Crummell.
The vote is 31 yea, 26 nay. House Bill 3339, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Minnis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask for unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Minnis asks for unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to welcome today the Reynolds High School Natural Resource Academy. There's 50 junior and senior high school sitting up in the gallery here. My daughter actually participated in that course as well, and she learned about wading in streams and grabbing fish and getting dirty and all those fun things. Welcome, and I hope today is a good experience for you.
Further courtesies, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At the other end of the age spectrum, I am pleased to extend courtesy to the House to folks who are visiting from my district. If you want to wave up there in the gallery from Willamette View Retirement Community, they're down in the gallery today. Very active, engaged set of folks. When Senator Schrader and I go and do town meetings there, we get peppered with questions on every topic imaginable. So welcome to the Capitol. You can pepper us in person today.
Welcome. It's good to have you. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd ask that you join me in welcoming today the 58 students from Lewis and Clark Elementary School's fifth grade who are here today with their teacher, Dan Wengler, and they are located in the gallery on the east side of our body here today. Welcome to all of them, and welcome to your state capitol.
Further courtesies. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3386, relating to vehicle protection products and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3386A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3386A comes to you from your Committee on Business and Labor, where it passed unanimously. This bill, 3386A, has been introduced on behalf of companies who sell these type of products, which this will be regulating, which is vehicle protection products. There's no opposition to the bill, and it passed unanimously. The committee already said that. Oregon has a high rate of automobile thefts. According to FBI data, Oregon has 19,262 auto thefts, had that many in 2005. with a net worth of $199 million. Many consumers are purchasing vehicle protection devices to prevent the theft of their automobile. These devices include steering wheel locks, like the club, alarm systems, ignition disablers, and satellite tracking systems. Many of these products come with a warranty. House Bill 3386A regulates warranties that accompany these vehicle protection products. The warranty will pay many expenses should the device fail to prevent the theft. Examples of warranty provisions are payment of your insurance deductible, rental of a replacement vehicle, the cost of licensing a replacement vehicle, and other costs associated with the loss of the automobile. If a consumer purchases a vehicle protection product that has a warranty, this measure assures the consumer that the benefits of the warranty are made good if they file a claim. House Bill 3386A requires companies that make warranties available to consumers to file their warranties and contact information with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The bill makes the warrantor subject to Oregon's Unlawful Trade Practices Act enforced by the Attorney General. House Bill 3386A assures consumers that they will have all the information necessary to file a claim and a contact number at DCBS should they want assistance. The bill requires the warrantor to purchase reimbursement insurance, which will pay claims should the warrantor fail to do so. This measure requires all advertising to be truthful and gives the DCBS rulemaking authority. House Bill 3386A, brought to you by the industry that it will affect, places Oregon in a growing list of states that have adopted similar consumer legislation, including California, Michigan, New York, Florida, Georgia, Texas, and many others. I urge your support.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Nelson votes aye. Representative Reed votes aye. House Bill 3386A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3420, relating to juvenile departments and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3420A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3420 comes to you from the Committee on the Judiciary, where it passed out unanimously. The bill requires the Secretary of State to regularly audit all county juvenile departments and audit at least four county departments each biennium, except during the first biennium, when the Secretary of State must audit no fewer than eight departments. It requires the Secretary of State during the first biennium to select four counties from the most populous departments and four departments from the least populous counties for audit. It requires the Secretary of State after the first biennium to audit two departments from the most populous and two from the least populous counties that have not already been audited. And it requires reporting to the Legislative Assembly and the Secretary of State to pay for auditing costs from available funds. On your desk, you have letters of support for House Bill 3420 from the Secretary of State, the County Juvenile Department Directors, the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, and Crime Victims United. Colleagues, House Bill 3420 is a good bill and deserves your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield? The
carrier does.
Thank you, Representative, and my apologies for not talking to you earlier. I just happened to notice this, and I noticed that when we did pass it out of committee and I supported the bill, that I had made a note pending removal of the referral to Ways and Means, and seeing the fiscal summary here, it has a pretty sizable price tag. So was that referral to Ways and Means rescinded?
Thank you for that question. There was some confusion about that fiscal statement, and that the funds are already in the Secretary of State's office to pay for this. They are already gearing up to go for it, and that was closely reviewed yesterday, and that there is that fiscal impact that shows what could be like $1 million is really not there. And we had it set to go to Ways and Means yesterday and then revisited everybody involved and pulled it back to run today.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up. Do you yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. So the statement that the Secretary estimates audit costs at $160,000 to $200,000 each is the modified statement, or?
That's for one audit.
Mm-hmm.
The statement was not modified. This is the only statement that's been issued.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up question. Does the carrier yield?
He does.
And so do I understand correctly that the Secretary of State's office is going to assume in its budget $160,000 to $200,000 per audit, and Ways and Means let this go, and it was not anticipated in the governor's budget?
Thank you, Representative. The Secretary of State's office in their audits division will within their budgetary set of framework, handle these.
Thank you, Representative.
Okay. Thank you. And Representative, thank you for those questions. I know it was confusing. We were very confused yesterday and made the rounds to everybody and got it straightened out to resolve those questions. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Flores votes aye. House Bill 3420, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3501, relating to rates for payments to non-contracting hospitals.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3501A. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, House Bill 3501A deals with what payment might be made by fully capitated health plans to hospitals that are not in a contract arrangement with them. There's been kind of a lot of strife as to how much the payments should be made by these plans that are paid by the state to take care of certain number of Oregon Health Plan enrollees. And so this bill basically says that the reimbursement rate will be made at 80% of the Medicare rate so that these hospitals can count on a certain level of payment if they're not in a contract with a fully capitated health plan. It sets a sunset in January 2 of 2010, and it gives some time for the various parties to get together and try and work out a long-term agreement. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Richardson, do you wish to close?
Mr. Speaker, there is one thing I need to let the body know. There was a Scrivener's error on page 2 of the bill. Basically, when the sunset takes place, it was meant to reinstate the formula that's currently in place. But the formula that's currently in place says that a hospital that accepts the payment according to the formula will accept that payment as payment in full. But in the way that it was written, those words were taken out of the sunset. And so now, as it's currently written, it says that if there's no agreement, the old formula goes in place, but it no longer says as payment in full. And so it means that the hospitals then legally could go for a deficiency judgment against the patient for the difference between what was paid by the federally capitated health plan and what was charged by the hospital. Now, that wasn't intended. It was a Scrivener's error, and so that'll get taken care of on the Senate side, and it shouldn't hold up the bill. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Burley votes aye. House Bill 3501A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3541, relating to ocean troll salmon fishery.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3541. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise to tell you about House Bill 3541. This was brought to us by the Oregon Salmon Commission. They asked for this bill, and our Coastal Caucus approved it 100%, and I'll tell you just a little bit about this. There are currently 1,200 commercial salmon troll permits available in Oregon. Under the existing law, if the number of commercial salmon permits renewed falls below 1,200, ODF&W issues the unrenewed permits in a lottery system. Currently, a lottery permit for a vessel of any size costs $75. This legislation has been thoroughly vetted by the commercial salmon industry. The Oregon Salmon Commission held 3 meetings along the coast in November of 2005 to address the lottery and limited entry issues. The Oregon Salmon Commission also surveyed commercial salmon fishermen in Oregon to seek their input. In February 2007, they developed a plan to reduce the number of permits down from 1,200 to 1,000 through natural attrition. The plan will establish a system that categorizes vessels based on their length and establishes a tiered permit fee structure through the lottery system based on the size of the vessel. The commercial salmon fishery in Oregon serves as a gateway for new people to enter Oregon's commercial fisheries. The Oregon Salmon Commission and other salmon fishermen want to ensure the salmon fishery continues to play that vital role. The bill, therefore, allows that if a small boat does not renew its license in a given year, only a small boat can qualify for that lottery permit. The bill includes 3 categories for these permits: vessels less than or equal to 30 feet at $250, vessels greater than 30 feet to 42 feet, $500, and vessels greater than 42 feet at $750. The new fee amounts will compensate ODF&W for the lost revenue that results from the decreased number of permits, and the new higher fees will also discourage some people who might speculate on commercial salmon fishing permits. To ensure that there aren't any misunderstandings, this bill does not limit commercial salmon fishing. This bill merely curtails the number of permits available through the lottery, and the commercial salmon industry was the prime mover behind this legislation. And I have, in my district, some new salmon fishermen coming into the industry who would really like to get into this, and they're very eager to have a chance. So please support this bill and your salmon fishery in Oregon.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
just briefly, please vote yes. Good bill. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Hanna, how do you vote? Representative Hanna votes aye. House Bill 3541, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2002, related to insurance and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2002A. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm very excited to be bringing you today House Bill 2002A, which addresses something that we all hear about from our constituents and we're all concerned about, and that's the cost of health insurance. House Bill 2002 strengthens the health insurance marketplace, especially for Oregon's small businesses, by expanding the small group pool to include businesses with up to 50 employees and creating new incentives for businesses to cover more employees and promote wellness programs. It's the first major market reform in this area since 1995. This bill grows out of recommendations in the Department of Consumer and Business Services Health Insurance in Oregon report, which was released earlier this year. As explained in that report, Oregon's small employer pooling laws were adopted in the 1990s to deal with the problem of small employers who either lose coverage or face large rate increases based on the health problems of one or two employees. By requiring insurers to pool their small businesses and limiting rate differences between employers, the laws have allowed small employers to do what large employers do, which is to spread the costs of a few sick employees across a much larger number of healthy employees. These reforms have worked to spread costs across larger pools, and it keeps rates more affordable for groups with less healthy and older workers, though they have not insulated small employers from the escalating costs of health care. Now let me turn to specifically what House Bill 2002 does and what it will accomplish. House Bill 2002 adds protections for groups with 26 to 50 employees. This bill expands rate regulation from groups with 2 to 25 employees who are already covered under the law to groups with 2 to 50 employees. This gives employers with 26 to 50 employees the same consumer protections as smaller employers, especially protection against rate increases based on health experience. It creates greater stability in the small group market. This bill will increase the aggregate size of the small group pool by about 37%. With what happens in other insurance pools, a larger pool makes for more effective risk spreading within that pool, allowing the costs of workers with significant health problems to be spread across a larger base of healthier workers. House Bill 2002 also streamlines the regulatory process. Many of Oregon's current small group laws, apply only to employers with 25 or fewer employees. Under federal law, small group regulations apply to groups with up to 50 employees. Federal law does not include rate regulation, but it does impose a number of regulations that make for a confusing regulatory environment in Oregon. This bill will streamline that system by establishing one uniformly regulated market for all employers with 2 to 50 employees. This bill will minimize any market disruption with a 3-year phase-in period. By providing additional rating protections for groups with 26 to 50 employees, House Bill 2002 will eventually lead to some groups getting rate decreases and other groups getting rate increases. This is, of course, inherent in the pooling concept. However, the bill minimizes any market disruption by providing for changes to be phased in over a three-year period of time. Also, this is an important part of the bill. House Bill 2002 encourages small employers with younger, healthier workers to provide health insurance coverage. It expands the rate bands to 3-to-1, meaning that the rates charged to the highest rated groups can be no more than 3 times the rates charged to the lowest rated groups. This creates new flexibility in the market. The bands are currently at 2.5-to-1. And what this will do is encourage employers with younger, healthier workers to provide coverage because carriers will be able to lower premium rates for those groups. At the same time, the new rate bands will keep rates more stable within the 26 to 50 market where there's no rating protections under current law. This bill also encourages small employers to expand coverage to get better rates. Under current law, insurers can only consider the age group of members when setting rates. Well, that doesn't seem too fair. House Bill 2002 allows carriers to consider a number of factors that will encourage employers to broaden coverage for employees and dependents. Specifically, the bill allows carriers to offer better rates to employers who contribute more to employee coverage, who offer dependent coverage, and who achieve higher levels of employee participation. The bill provides wellness incentives to small employer groups by allowing carriers to consider factors such as wellness programs and participation in wellness programs, use of tobacco products by employees. Those factors will now be considered as well as considering age when setting premium rates for small employer groups. Wellness programs encourage healthy lifestyles for all group members. The bill also encourages insurers to develop longer-term interest in each employer group by allowing longevity credits for groups that stay with the same carrier. I know how frustrating it is for families when their insurance carrier changes. Well, this bill will help with that in that regard, and it's common in other lines of insurance and encourages a better alignment of interest between insurers and employers for long-term healthy outcomes. Finally, the bill allows limited use of expected claim status as a rating factor. Because the use of claims experience also may increase rates for the least healthy groups, the bill strictly limits the use of this factor. Specifically, claims experience can only be used to increase or decrease a group's rates by 5%. I know that covers a lot of different areas, but the bottom line, colleagues, is that this bill is going to help small businesses. It's going to help their employees by providing better rates, and that's something that we all care about, and so do our constituents. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
As the good representative from Washington County has pointed out, there are several things in this bill that I find very worthy, and I'm going to support it. This is one of several recommendations brought to us by DCBS to address issues of access to and cost of health care, which is one of the number one things that I heard about as I was talking to people prior to the legislative session starting. So health care being a top issue for so many people in my district, I find it very attractive to look at these sorts of bills that address cost and access. There was another bill that we have already passed earlier in the session, one of the DCBS recommendations, House Bill 3103. So this is one of those several good, sensible recommendations. Several things to point out that I thought made a lot of sense to take care of. Because the federal law is providing small group protections for up to 50 employees, but not including rate regulation, there's presently this confusing patchwork as the good representative mentioned, between state and federal laws. So it's confusing to consumers, confusing to business, and in my estimation, it must be confusing to regulators when you have state and federal laws that are so out of sync. This bill will help reconcile the differences and get those laws more in sync. When we do that, it's going to help stabilize the rating pools, which in the long run means that overall we help suppress the rate at which we see these increases happening. We can't stop the increases. Costs go up, but we can dampen the speed at which the costs go up, and we can make that cost curve happen more gradually. So to me, I think it's very important to take the long view of this, which is if we can keep rates from rising so fast for more people, then we're doing a good thing for everybody. So I encourage an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just wanted to point out to you... To the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Apologize for getting ahead of myself there. Colleagues, just want to point out this is really a great bill, and I don't want anybody to fall out of their chair, but this bill had a unanimous vote out of the House Consumer Protection Committee, so take note. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bonamici, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Very briefly. Colleagues, the representative from the Emerald Empire took part of my closing by telling you that this bill did pass unanimously from the Consumer Protection Committee with one member excused. It's the product of much discussion among insurers, consumers, and other stakeholders. It does represent a step forward, especially for Oregon's small group market. It's going to help consumers, and it is going to be phased in over the next 3 years, and we'll see some very positive effects from that. With that, colleagues, I do encourage your aye vote, and, Mr. Speaker, I respectfully request a call of the House.
Representative Bonamici requests a call of the House. She is joined by... Representative Holvey, Representative Barnhart, Representative Riley, Representative Edwards, Representative Nathanson. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, the sergeant-at-arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll. Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Berger-Beyer, Bonamici,
here.
Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Bruin-Buckley, Buckley-Burley, Burley-Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Cannon-Clem, Clem-Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Esquivel-Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Hannah-Holvey, Hunt, Hunt Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, McPherson Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Morgan Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Roblin Rosenbaum, Rosenbaum Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Thatcher Tilmay, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Berger, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Cannon, Esquivel, Hannah, Hunt, McPherson, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Thatcher, excuse, not subject to the call, three, Boquist, Butler, Crummel. All members are present. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 2002A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Before we take a recess motion, are there any announcements? Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the return to courtesy, please?
Representative Lim requests unanimous consent that to return to the rules of courtesies. Are there any objections? Seeing none, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a visitor from the Los Angeles and also from the Portland area, and two good-looking ladies over there. And the lady with the pink is Cindy Bach, come from Los Angeles, California. She chairs the board of directors of the Korean American Business Association. Also, she's
colleagues,
the vice
can we
president.
Quiet down for a little bit?
She's the vice president of the Hollywood Martial Art Talent Colleges. Cindy has three children and five grandchildren. Even with his busy schedule, she volunteers for the Domestic Violence Center. Next is Jane Kong from Tualatin. She's in the representative Bruins District. She's the owner of an import and export business. Jane has two children. Mrs. Kong is a board member of the Korean American Chamber of Commerce. I understand her husband is also the descendant of the Confucius. So I would like to extend a welcome to this wonderful lady. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Welcome.
Are there further courtesies? Seeing none. We are under third reading of House bills. Chair requests unanimous consent to take up House Bill 2185 immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2185, relating to public health.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2185. Representative Cowan.
I beg that we could do this one.
Do you need our vote on it?
Well, I don't know. I need to present it, though, right now. Thank you.
Colleagues, thank you for your patience with me on this one. I ask out of respect for Dr. Susan Allen that we take up this bill today. Dr. Allen has been patiently awaiting this bill. It's one that we worked very, very hard on, and it's important to us. So I'd like to thank Dr. Allen for her contributions. She brings an amazing expertise to the state of Oregon and has been most helpful with 2185. Which comes to you now from the Joint Emergency Preparedness and Ocean Policy Committee. It's a product of a work group that convened over a year ago to look at Oregon's public health laws. This bill will ensure that Oregon's public health laws allow state and local officials to take appropriate actions to protect the health of the public in an emergency. Amazingly, current state laws for addressing public health and medical emergencies are very weak, fragmented, and fail to provide many of the tools that would be essential in addressing major disease outbreaks and other health threats during an emergency. something that I personally think is relatively important. There are four major issues addressed by this bill. They include quarantine and isolation. The bill clearly describes procedures and conditions for quarantine and isolations and provides individuals with better due process and recognition of their rights, while also making it possible for public health officials to act promptly and manage groups when needed for assessment or disease control. Secondly, it provides consistency of response across communities and facilities. The public health director would have the authority to establish guidelines for dealing with limited medical resources or adjusting how medical care is provided if needed to deal with an overwhelming or extraordinary emergency such as influenza pandemic. This would improve the fairness and effectiveness of medical response during challenging circumstances. It's also interesting to note that current state law does not provide for urgent management of a large number of human remains. This bill will address the management of remains and leave the medical examiner still in charge, but there would be a requirement that she consult with the public health director to ensure adequate infection control procedures are in place. And finally, it tackles toxic contamination or radiation, where current law has gaps regarding authority to assess or manage toxic hazards. There are a few issues that it does not address, including some liability issues that merit further discussion, but probably in a different venue. Passage of this bill is critical to our preparedness efforts. Current public health law does not adequately protect us. Provisions in House Bill 2185 will help the state to be able to provide a prompt, coordinated, and effective public health and medical response. I thank you for your understanding, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2185A should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Krieger off the floor. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Burley votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Off the floor. Representative... House Bill 2185A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Before we take a recess motion, are there any announcements? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to announce that the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance will meet at noon, which is just 5 minutes from now. Please bring your lunch to the Democratic Caucus Room, room 360. Again, that's in the Democratic Caucus Room 360 at noon, Women's Health and Wellness Alliance.
Further announcements. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, yesterday you had a flyer on your desk about a time to get together to remember Max Sumner, and it was going to be at 5 o'clock today, and we will still hold to that time or immediately after floor session, and just want to encourage you to come and share about Mac. Thanks.
Further announcements. Representative Jensen, 4 o'clock. Recess motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House end in recess until 4 p.m. this afternoon.
Representative Jensen moves that the House stand in recess until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Without objection, we stand in recess.